well. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And well, tonight we would have had a guest, and he had to beg off at the last minute, so I'm just going to start out telling you something that I feel very, very strongly about. It's about a speech that was given last Thursday in the House of Representatives by Congressman Jack Murtha. Now, Congressman Murtha was wounded when he was a Marine in Vietnam, and he received the Bronze Star and two Purple Hearts and the Vietnamese Cross for valor and gallantry. And then when he retired from the Marine Corps, he came back to the United States and became a congressman from a blue-collar area in Pennsylvania and has served there since 1973. He remained in the Marine Corps and retired after 37 years of service with a rank of colonel in the Marine Corps. Well, Congressman Murtha had supported the current administration's attack on Afghanistan because, after all, we were told we went into Afghanistan to fight terrorism and to capture Osama bin Laden, and the president promised the American people we'd capture Osama bin Laden, dead or alive. And then, of course, when the president said that we had solid intelligence, that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction that were threatening the United States, why, Congressman Murtha supported President Bush. Now, remember, Murtha is a Democrat, but he's supporting the Republicans because he really believed what the president had told him. And, of course, he, being in the service, spent his weekends visiting the soldiers and sailors at Bethesda Hospital and at Walter Reed Hospital and began to become somewhat disillusioned with the war. And then he read a report that was put out by our Department of Defense about what was really going on over in Iraq. And at that point, he decided he had no alternative but to speak out, and he knew that the Bush administration would come after him, that they would try to destroy his career, but he was a Marine, and he had to do what was right. So let me read to you the speech. Now, I have read a number of newspapers, about five, six of them, New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the San Jose Mercury, our local newspaper, and at least one other newspaper. None of them have carried the whole speech. They've taken a few excerpts. They said, oh, he wants to pull the troops out over there, and he feels our policy has failed. But even the New York Times did not bother to print the full text of the speech, although the New York Times claims to be the newspaper of record and prints everything that's fit to print. But they referred you to their website, and of course, when you go to their website, you can't find the article. I was able to get the article yesterday off of Congressman Murtha's website. There was a big banner at the top that talked about the talk he'd given on the 17th of November. Today, as it went to the website, the flag is still there, the banner is still there, but it's a different talk, entirely different. It professes to be the talk he gave on the 17th of November, but you have a great deal of difficulty finding that talk. You can finally eventually find it if you know what you're looking for. And the question is there an organized effort to keep the American people from knowing what Congressman Murtha said? Well, we're going to tell you just a little bit more about what happened after he gave his speech. And then, of course, we'll read the speech to you because I want everybody out in the listening audience to know exactly what Congressman Murtha said when he stood on the floor of the House of Representatives and almost brought a riot there when he concluded his speech. Immediately after the Congressman Murtha had sat down, Congressman who acting congressman, his name was Mike Simpkins, he was the acting Speaker of the House, he immediately recognized a freshman Republican congressman from Ohio, a woman named Jean Schmidt, and she went to the podium, and this is what she said. "Yesterday I stood at Arlington National Cemetery, attending the funeral of a young Marine in my district. He believed what we were doing is right thing, and he had the courage to lay his life on the line to do it. A few minutes ago, I received a call from Colonel Danny Bupp, Ohio representative from the 88th District in the House of Representatives, and he asked me to send Congress a message. Stay the course. He also asked me to send Congressman Murtha a message that cowards cut and run. Marines never do. Danny and the rest of America and the world want the assurance from this body that we will see this through." Well, she sat down and started to sit down, and pandemonium broke loose on the House of Representatives, and the Democratic congressman began to yell and scream and demand that Congressman Schmidt's words be stricken from the record. And of course, Congressman Mike Simpson, who was there, the presiding officer, tried to gavel order. Certainly, there was Marty Meehan, who was a Democrat from Massachusetts, screamed at the top of his lungs across the auditorium of the House of Representatives, "You guys are pathetic." And several of the Democratic congressmen ran over to the Republican side and began shaking their fists and shaking their fingers at the Republicans, saying, "I mean, Murtha is a decorated Marine hero, and you have the courage, you have the audacity to do this," and, well, they almost lost everything. There was certainly no camaraderie, and, of course, eventually they were able to regain order. And the House of Representatives, because you see, what Congressman Murtha had said had provoked a tremendous emotional response in the hearts of the Democrats and I think in many of the Republicans as well. Because you see, most people in the House of Representatives and most Americans don't know what's really going on there today. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I was simply pointing out that what had really transpired in the House of Representatives after Congressman Murtha gave his speech, was a freshman congressman, a Republican from Ohio, was given the floor, and she got up and made a statement, and I will read it again because I want you to hear it. And this is what Jean Schmidt said. "Yesterday I stood at Arlington National Cemetery attending the funeral of a young Marine in my district. He believed what we're doing is right, and he had the courage to lay his life on the line to do it. A few minutes ago, I received a call from Colonel Danny Bupp, Ohio representative from the 88th District in the House of Representatives, and he asked me to send Congressman Murtha a message. He asked me to send Congress a message, stay the course. He also asked me to send Congressman Murtha a message that cowards cut and run. Marines never do that. Danny and the rest of America and the world want the assurance from this body that we will see this through." Well, that's what was said. Well, let me point out that I called Congressman Gene Schmidt's office and tried to get the exact quotation of what was said, and they wouldn't give it to me. And I said, "Well, don't you have it recorded?" And they said, "No, those words were stricken from the record." And they should have been, because apparently now today it's coming out that Colonel Danny Bupp was a Marine Corps colonel, but he's not over in Iraq. He's fighting the war in the legislature there in Ohio. And in fact, he's never been in a war at all. And now he denies that he ever made the statement that's been attributed to him by Congressman Schmidt. And this may well cost her political career, and it should. Because, of course, she got up and she lied before the House of Representatives. But why should anybody be surprised that people would lie on the House of Representatives? Maybe it's such a refreshing thing to hear somebody who's honest get up and give a speech. So I wanted to tell you what Congressman Murtha said. And this is the speech that was given on November 17th that you will not find under the banner headline on Congressman Murtha's webpage. "The war in Iraq is not going as advertised. It is a flawed policy wrapped in illusion. The American public is way ahead of us. The United States and coalition troops have done all they can in Iraq, but it's time for a change of direction. Our military is suffering. The future of our country is at risk. We cannot continue on the present course. It is evident that continued military action in Iraq is not in the best interest of the United States of America, of the Iraqi people, or the Persian Gulf region. General Casey said in September 2005 hearings, the perception of occupation in Iraq is a major driving force behind the insurgency. General Abizid had said on the same date, reducing the size and visibility of the coalition forces in Iraq is a part of our counterinsurgency strategy. For 2.5 years, I've been concerned about the U.S. policy and the plan in Iraq. I've addressed my concerns with the administration and the Pentagon and have spoken out in public about my concerns. The main reason for going to war has been discredited. A few days before the start of the war, I was in Kuwait. The military drew a red line around Baghdad and said that when U.S. forces cross that line, they will be attacked with weapons of mass destruction. But the U.S. forces said they were prepared. They were well-trained, and they had appropriate protective gear. Well, we spend more money on intelligence than all the countries of the world together, and more on intelligence than most countries' gross domestic product. But the intelligence concerning Iraq was wrong. It is not a world intelligence failure. It is a U.S. intelligence failure, and the way that intelligence was misused. I've been visiting our wounded troops at Bethesda and Walter Reed Hospital almost every week since the beginning of the war. And what demoralizes them is going to war with not enough troops and equipment to make the transition to peace. The devastation caused by the explosive devices being deployed to Iraq when their homes have been ravaged by hurricanes, being on their second or third deployment and leaving their families behind without a network of support. The threat posed by terrorism is real, but we have other threats that cannot be ignored. We must be prepared to face all threats. The future of our military is at risk. Our military and their families are stretched thin. Many say that the army is broken. Some of our troops are on their third deployment. Recruitment is down, even as our military is lowers its standards. Defense budgets are being cut. Personnel costs are skyrocketing, particularly in health care. Choices will have to be made. We cannot allow promises we have made to our military families in terms of service benefits, in terms of their health care, to be negotiated away. Procurement programs that ensure our military dominance cannot be negotiated away. We must be prepared. The war in Iraq has caused huge shortfalls at our bases in the U.S. Washington said, to be prepared for war is one of the most effective means of preserving peace. We must rebuild our army. Our deficit is growing out of control. The director of the Congressional Budget Office recently admitted to being terrified about the budget deficit in the coming decades. This is the first prolonged war we have fought. With 3 years of tax cuts, without full mobilization of American industry, and without a draft, the burden of this war has not been shared equally. The military and their families are shouldering this burden. Our military has been fighting a war in Iraq for over 2.5 years. Our military has accomplished its mission and done its duty. Our military captured Saddam Hussein and captured or killed his closest associates. But the war continues to intensify. Deaths and injuries are growing, with over 2,079 confirmed American deaths. Over 15,500 Americans have been seriously injured, and it is estimated that over 50,000 will suffer from battle fatigue. There have been reports of at least 30,000 Iraqi civilian casualties and deaths. I just recently visited Anbar province in Iraq to assess the condition on the ground. Last May 2005, The Department of the Emergency Supplement Spending Bill. The House included the Moran Amendment, which was accepted in conference, and which required the Secretary of Defense to submit quarterly reports to Congress in order to more accurately measure stability and security in Iraq. We have now received two reports. I am disturbed by the findings in key indicator areas. Oil production and energy production are below pre-war levels. Our reconstruction efforts have been crippled by the security situation. Only $9 billion of the $18 billion appropriated for reconstruction has been spent. Unemployment remains at about 60%. Let me repeat that. Unemployment remains about 60%. Clean water is scarce. Only $500 million of the $2.2 billion appropriated for water projects has been spent. And most importantly, insurgent incidents have increased from about 150 per week to over 700 per week in the last year. Instead of attacks going down over time, and with the addition of more troops, attacks have grown dramatically. Since the revelations of Abu Ghraib, American casualties have doubled. An annual State Department report in 2004 indicated a sharp increase in global terrorism. I said over a year ago, and now the military and the administration agrees that Iraq cannot be won militarily. And 2 years ago, the key to progress in Iraq is to Iraqitize, internationalize, and energize. I believe the same today, but I have concluded that the presence of U.S. troops in Iraq is impeding this progress. Our troops have become the primary target of the insurgency. They are united against U.S. forces, and we have become a catalyst for violence. U.S. troops are the common enemy of the Sunnis, the Sandinistas, and the foreign jihadists. I believe with a U.S. troop redeployment, the Iraq security forces will be incentivized to take control. A recent poll conducted shows that over 80% of Iraqis are strongly opposed to the presence of coalition troops. And about 45% of the Iraqi population believe the attacks against American troops are justified. I believe we need to turn Iraq over to the Iraqis. I believe before the Iraqi elections scheduled for mid-December, the Iraqi people and the emerging government must be put on notice that the United States will immediately redeploy. All of the Iraqis must know that Iraq is free, free from the United States occupation. I believe this will send a signal to the Sunnis to join the political process for the good of a free Iraq. And my plan calls for the creation of a quick reaction force in the region, to create an over-the-horizon presence of Marines to diplomatically pursue security and stability in Iraq. This war needs to be personalized, and as I have said before, I visited with severely wounded of this war, and they are suffering. Because we in Congress are charged with sending our sons and daughters into battle, it is our responsibility, our obligation to speak out for them. That's why I'm speaking out. Our military has done everything that has been asked of them. The U.S. cannot accomplish anything further in the Iraq militarily. It's time to bring them home. And then, of course, Congresswoman Jean Schmidt got up and said, "Yesterday, I stood at Arlington National Cemetery attending the funeral of a young Marine who thought what he was doing was right and had the courage to lay his life on the line to do it. A few minutes ago, I received a call from Colonel Danny Blupp, Ohio representative from the 88th District in the House of Representatives, and he asked me to send Congress a message, stay the course. He also asked me to send Congressman Murtha a message that cowards cut and run. Marines never do. Danny and the rest of America and the world want the assurance from this body that we will see this through." Well, ladies and gentlemen, there are the two sides. And when we get back, we're going to be talking about how this all fits together. Because, you see, both sides are deceived. And until the American people can really see what's going on, we will continue the senseless slaughter in Afghanistan and Iraq and soon in America. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I hope that you were as touched by Congressman Murtha's words as I was. And I could imagine what a terrible, terrible feeling it would be week after week to go to Bethesda Naval Hospital and to Walter Reed Army Hospital and see the young men there who've lost an arm or a leg, who've actually lost their sight, who will be crippled for life. He tells in another place, he gave a press conference after this, and apparently he almost broke down during the press conference, and he told about talking to one family. Their son had both of his hands blown off because, of course, he had picked up one of our explosive devices, some sort of a little, small little device we have, and it had gone off, and the boy had both of his hands blown off. But the government, of course, would not give him a Purple Heart because, after all, why, his hands were blown off by one of our devices, not one of the enemy's devices. And Congressman Murtha had contacted the military and said, well, if you won't give him a Purple Heart, I'll give him one of mine. Whereupon they turned around and they said, all right, we'll give him a Purple Heart. They didn't want to give him a Purple Heart. You have to understand that our servicemen are expendable. You have to understand what Henry Kissinger is quoted as saying in the book The Final Days by Woodward and Bernstein, where Henry Kissinger is talking to a group of diplomats and saying American fighting men are simply stupid, dumb animals to be used for foreign policy purposes. American servicemen are simply stupid, dumb animals to be used for foreign policy purposes. Who is responsible for what's really going on in Iraq? Why, Henry Kissinger and the men who surround him. We had taken Baghdad within a relatively few days. It was an amazing accomplishment, and we were establishing our military in Baghdad, and of course the military, the American military, wanted to turn Iraq back to the Iraqis. They wanted to maintain the Iraqi police force. They wanted to maintain the Iraqi army. They wanted to maintain the Iraqi civil service and build on that. And if they found war criminals there within the structure of the army or of the police or the civil service, they could be tried. But Paul Bremer, who, of course, worked very closely with Henry Kissinger, Paul Bremer, one of the elite, what I call the occult hierarchy, in my estimation, who ruled the world, Paul Bremer came in and had the authority to supersede the advice of the American officers in command, and he dissolved the 400,000 men Iraqi army after we had dropped flyers and promised them that we would not disband the army, because after all, we only went there to get Saddam Hussein. And then Paul Bremer disbanded the Iraqi police, because although we'd promised we wouldn't do that, and then he disbanded the civil service. And without a military, and without a police force, and without a civil service to maintain the electricity and the water and the sewage, you had chaos. Now, why would you do something that stupid unintentionally unless you wanted to create chaos, unless you did not want to actually be in a situation where you could turn Iraq back over to the Iraqis? And I think you have to understand that Paul Bremer and the people he represents have a different worldview. And they want a chaotic Middle East so they can justify keeping American forces there. And, well, I want to, of course, use an analogy, and when we get back here in just a moment, we'll talk about the similarities between what is actually happening today in Iraq and what happened in Vietnam. Because, you see, what we're seeing in Iraq is deja vu all over again. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I was simply pointing out that the reason we have chaos in Iraq, the reason we have 60% unemployment, the reason we have almost no water there and no jobs and nothing is getting accomplished, the reason we have an insurgency is because we are the occupying force, and 80% of the Iraqis look upon us as an occupying force because the Iraqis are not stupid people. And they know we have done everything to create chaos there. And as I said during the break, the American military had taken Baghdad within a relatively few days. 8 days or so, we were in Baghdad, we were in control. The American military wanted to maintain the Iraqi army, but Paul Bremer was sent in to destabilize that. Paul Bremer comes from Kissinger Associates, or had worked for Kissinger Associates. He's one of the people I call the occult hierarchy that rule the world, part of the elite group that are dedicated not to America, but to this internationalist dream. And Paul Bremer disbanded the Iraqi army, disbanded the Iraqi police force, disbanded the Iraqi civil service, created chaos, and then My goodness, we've got chaos. Well, we certainly can't leave. We've got chaos. We didn't have anywhere near as much chaos. And the longer we stay, the more chaos there is. And what Congressman Murtha pointed out was that the incidence of terrorist attacks had increased from 150 a week to 700 a week during this past year. Does that sound like we're winning the war? President Bush insists we're winning the war. Everything's great politically. After all, we're going to have another election over there. Well, we had the first election in Iraq, and nobody knew who the candidates were until 2 days beforehand, because we couldn't tell anybody who the casualties were, because the insurgents would kill them. So does that sound like a democratic election where nobody knows who the candidates are? And who picked the candidates and who let them run? Why, we did, and the Iraqi people are smart enough to know that. And then, of course, we had them vote on a constitution, but nobody could read the final draft of the constitution because we kept changing it right up until the last minute. So they went to the polls and voted for a constitution they never read. And this is how the game is played. But even the puppets that we put in place are demanding that we get out. And just today, the leaders of Iraq demanded a timetable for American withdrawal. But you must understand, our leaders do not want to withdraw. They want to keep our troops there, stationed in the Middle East indefinitely, and they're going to do it irrespective of whether the Iraqi people want it or the American people want it, because they have their own agenda. And it's sort of like, well, it's like what happened in Vietnam. And you can't understand what's going on in Iraq today unless you understand what happened in Vietnam a quarter of a century ago. And, of course, if you ever stop and think about, you know, North Vietnam was a little country, a little larger than the state of Mississippi, and it had, very little in the way of manufacturing capacity. It was dependent upon a dike system to keep the country from flooding. We could have ended the war at any time by bombing the dikes or bombing the electric plants. We never tried to win the war. We gave massive aid to the Soviet Union. The United States and our allies in Europe gave them $40 billion. We lent them $40 billion. We built the largest truck manufacturing plant in the entire world at Kama River in Russia to build the trucks so that they could send trucks to send to Vietnam to carry the supplies to kill our boys. We paid for the Fiat motor plant. We gave the Russians the technology to build the MiG fighters and the radar-guided anti-aircraft to use against our boys, and prevented our boys from ever really winning the war. I personally interviewed William H. Sullivan, the American ambassador to Vietnam in 1980. He was at the American Assembly at Columbia University. I interviewed General Lew Walt, a four-star Marine general. Both of them told me we could have won the war in simply 2 months if they'd been allowed to, if we could have simply attacked North Vietnam, but we could never do that. Why? Because we were financing the North Vietnamese. Now, and let me just carry this over to Iraq. Who is financing the insurgents? You go up on Google on your computer, and you type in who is funding the Iraqi insurgents, and the name Saudi Arabia comes up again and again. And, of course, Pakistan and terrorism. Type in Pakistan and terrorism. Why, General Sharif, who we give billions of dollars to every year, has all sorts of Al-Qaeda terrorist plants, training camps in Pakistan. There are all sorts of terrorist training camps in Afghanistan. One advantage of the internet is you can check out and find if what I'm telling you is true. If you can't find the articles, maybe they're going to take down the sites. Like somebody, of course, took down Congressman Murtha's speech off of his own website there and placed something else in his place, because they don't want the American people to hear disturbing things like this. Understand, ladies and gentlemen, there are powerful forces at work. And when we get back, we're going to welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. It's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. I would like to suggest we're doing everything we can to aid the Saudis and even giving them additional money. And that money, much of it is being used to finance a country that's financing the Iraqi insurgents that are killing American boys, just like we financed the North Vietnamese who killed American boys a quarter of a century ago. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course we're going to be welcoming your calls here at Radio Liberty at 1-888 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or at 464-8295. But one of the questions that nobody wants to ask is, who is funding the Iraqi insurgents? You don't keep up anything of this magnitude over a period of time, with, of course, up to 700 terrorist attacks a week, you know, without somebody putting up the money. Certainly a lot of these people have families, and somebody's got to finance their families. Somebody's got to teach them how to make the bombs. Somebody's got to provide them with the cell phones and the other equipment they need for attacking America. And somebody has to drill into their mind this intense hatred, this resurgence of this radical form of Islam that says it's wonderful to die for Allah because then you're going to go to heaven. Where did the Islamic terrorist movement come from? Well, it did not exist 25 years ago, outside of a very, very small group known as the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, and they had very, very few supporters. And then, of course, outside of the Wahhabi, and these were the radical clerics in Saudi Arabia, that there was no worldwide terrorist movement. So where did the worldwide terrorist movement come from? Well, those of you who have listened to our programs and read our articles on Foreknowledge 111, which we've now put into a series of little pamphlets. But go back and start reading my letters are up on the Internet, and they're starting in September of 2001, as we appraised what happened that day. And you will find out that the United States government, the CIA, was actually financing the Mujahideen in Afghanistan. We were going around the Arab world recruiting warriors and then bringing them there and indoctrinating them in the radical form of Islam. And the CIA was distributing copies of the Quran to indoctrinate these men going into battle with this idea of how wonderful it was to die killing the infidel. Now, who is the infidel? Why, ladies and gentlemen, that's people like you and me who are not the Muslims. And then the United States Agency for International Development provided, I think it was $51 or $53 million to buy American textbooks in Arabic to give to Islamic children to indoctrinate them in this radical form of Islam and the militant form of Islam. Now, why would you try to poison children's minds with this sort of radical ideas unless you were trying to turn them into terrorists, or what we would call terrorists today? And those of you who have not seen Carol Matriciana's, well, we'll talk about that in just a moment here. Yeah. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we've been talking about Congressman Murtha's speech, and I'm sure some people support the war and some people oppose the war. You must understand that's the way it's supposed to be. They, of course, want people fighting back and forth, never really asking the real question, should we stay, should we get out? No, the question is not should we stay or should we get out. The question is the question we should have asked in Vietnam, who's financing the North Vietnamese? How can this little ragtag country in North Vietnam stand up against the mightiest country in the world over a period of 10 years and defeat the mightiest country in the world? Well, the reason they did it was because our government was subsidizing the North Vietnamese. We were subsidizing both the Chinese and primarily the Russians were actually providing the military wherewithal to the North Vietnamese. Now, why would you do something that foolish unintentionally? And it wasn't done unintentionally. It was done as part of a grand plan. And we have often referred to an article that appeared in the January 1967 issue of Foreign Affairs magazine written by McGeorge Bundy. Now, Foreign Affairs is published by the Council on Foreign Relations, which is America's invisible government, and is simply a front for the occult hierarchy that rules the world. Foreign Affairs, of course, is published by the Council on Foreign Relations, which came out of the secret society that Cecil Rhodes created in 1891, and that's all covered in my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and all the documents are there, and we can tell you, you know, we know that it happened because, of course, one of the members of the secret society was thrown out of the society and wrote about it in his diary and a number of other books. And even who was there when the secret society was created. But, of course, what everybody has missed is the spiritual forces that energized this, because almost all of the people in the secret society came out of one or another occult organization. These people who tap into the other dimension for the supernatural strength and power. And so in January of 1967, McGeorge Bundy wrote an article for Foreign Affairs magazine. Now, McGeorge Bundy had been chairman of the National Security Council, had gotten his, it was there at the Bay of Pigs when we betrayed the men who went into the Bay of Pigs and made sure that they went in to die. Never to be allowed to win, of course, but to be sent in to die. And McGeorge Bundy then had been there when President Kennedy was assassinated, and then when President Johnson came to power and was part of the scam to draw us into the Vietnam War. And by 1967, McGeorge Bundy was moving out of government to become the president of the Ford Foundation, where he would continue subsidizing subversive activities determined to undermine the fabric of our nation. McGeorge Bundy was a member of Skull and Bones, a close personal friend of Henry Stimson, who had been Secretary of War during the Second World War. And, of course, Stimson was instrumental in getting America into the Second World War. And, of course, covering up for the fact that we knew the Japanese were going to attack. But I've read Stimson's diary. We'll censor the pages out of it if you'd like. I got them back at the Sterling Library at Yale University, where Stimson talked about how he'd been to the White House on the 25th of November, and the president was saying, well, the Japanese are going to attack probably next Monday. The only question is how we'll get into the war and get the Japanese to fire the first shot. And, well, almost 400,000 Americans died in that war senselessly because, of course, we did everything we could to maintain the war as long as we possibly could. And if those of you have not yet seen the article out of the Chicago Tribune that was dated August 15th, 1945, the day that they signed the peace treaty on the Missouri in the harbor there at Tokyo. And, of course, the article points out that Japanese have been trying to surrender for 5 or 6 months, and we wouldn't let them. And I know that's true because, of course, General Wedemeyer, I had an opportunity to spend some time with him, and he was a four-star army general who was actually immortalized in that Herman Wouk's The Winds of War. It was a docudrama. It was a story, but it was a story of an army general who spent a lot of time at the White House with President Roosevelt and Churchill, and that was actually Albert Wedemeyer. But General Wedemeyer, had been in command in China during the Second World War, and he told me, yes, they'd intercepted the messages that Japanese were trying to surrender, and we wouldn't let them surrender. Well, anyway, certainly Stimson, who is Skull and Bones and Council on Foreign Relations, was a very good friend of McGeorge Bundy, and this is what McGeorge Bundy said, writing in the January 1967 issue of Foreign Affairs, article entitled The End of Either Or. It would be an act of folly for any true liberal to say we must make a choice between guns and butter, between persistence in Vietnam and strong support for our domestic programs, for exactly the opposite is the case. Anyone who believes in the great new departures in health and education and welfare, who believes in the true cause of progress, should not strengthen the hand of our opposition by saying we ought to get out of Vietnam, for exactly the opposite is the case. The road forward at home is by persistence in Vietnam, and retreat in Vietnam would bring strong reaction to our domestic policies. That's what it was all about. Vietnam was a diversion so they could socialize and change America. And America did change forever during the Vietnam War. And the Supreme Court took God and prayer out of our schools and found women had the right to abortion. They centralized all power in Washington, D.C., changed our immigration laws, and laid the foundation for the paganization of America. They knew exactly what they were doing, and Vietnam was a great diversion. Just as Iraq is a great diversion today. The road forward at home is not by getting out of Iraq, but by persistence in Iraq. And so we continue covering for the Saudis, who are financing the insurgents, who are killing our boys, and are killing the other Arabs there, the Iraqi people. And we continue financing Pakistan, which, of course, has the training camps for the Al-Qaeda terrorists, who are infiltrating throughout the whole world. And you see, we would not have this world terrorist movement if it had not been for our intelligence agencies creating that. And if you doubt that, you really need to get the book. Pardon me, it's a video called Jihad in America. It was actually completed in 1994, but it contains footage from 1988, probably shot by the FBI, that shows the Islamic terrorists from Al-Qaeda here in the United States in 1988 in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, advocating jihad. Well, we're going to, of course, take some calls here. You have to understand that what you're seeing in Iraq is Vietnam all over again. What you're seeing in Iraq today is a situation where we are funding the people who are funding and we're supporting the people and protecting the people who are funding the insurgents. And just as the Russians funded the North Vietnamese, who funded the insurgents in South Vietnam, so it is today that we are doing everything we can to protect Pakistan and Saudi Arabia that are funding the insurgents that are killing our boys. You see, we do not intend to end this war. It's a wonderful diversion that is our attention is focused on Iraq. Why, of course, we're losing our freedom here at home. American boys went to Vietnam thinking they were fighting for our freedom. They weren't. They were a diversion as we, of course, moved away from our constitutional republic towards establishing a democracy. And, of course, in Iraq, this is a diversion as we move towards the New World Order. The new world religion, globalization, taking down our borders, bankrupting our nation, demoralizing our people. One of the last steps before the establishment of the new world government. We've got Bart calling from Carmel, and we'll certainly open up our lines at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Maybe you disagree with me. Maybe you think I'm being unfair. Maybe you think we ought to just continue sending our boys over to the meet over there, and maybe you think we ought to pull out. You have to understand that's the wrong question to ask. Because if we pull out, there's going to be chaos. If we stay, there's going to be chaos. Which choice do you want? Do you want to be shot or hung? Hi, Bart. How are you doing?
Good evening, Dr. Stan. Fine, thank you. Your ability to clarify history in a way that makes sense to us all is very valuable, and I really appreciate it. And when you explain it in that way that you do, we can see that the same blueprint is used again and again in the same methods of manipulating the public. Are used again and again, quite often it seems with even the same people doing it. It's just so blatantly obvious. My motivation for calling tonight was to suggest that the Christians in the listening audience may wish to offer a prayer, as I will, for the for God to give protection to Congressman Murtha. I also heard that speech on C-SPAN, and I here I am I guess you'd call me a Christian constitutionalist. Listening to this Democrat, this wonderful man, this man that was standing there so bravely, all alone, not really alone. There are a couple of others that take brave stands in Congress, but for all practical purposes, alone there, acting like the Americans that we read about of our founding fathers, bravely taking a stand against a great wrong that was ongoing. And my heart went out to him. And I was very touched and moved by his speech, and it was a very important one. And another prayer that I would also offer would be that the courage displayed by Congressman Murtha spread among the other congressmen there, too, so that those who might not necessarily have enough courage on their own to stand up might, figuratively speaking, hold Congressman Murtha's hand and together take more and more and more and more of a stand against this awful crime that's being committed by the global crime syndicate that has taken control of our government.
Amen to that. I agree with everything you're saying, Bart, and I admire Murtha, but apparently he's a very conservative Democrat, and apparently he's, I think he may even be pro-life. But, you know, there are a lot of good people out there on the Democrat side. We just need everybody to unite, because we all want to maintain our freedom. And both the Democrats and the Republicans, the question is, how are we going to do it? And you're never going to do it by arguing back and forth among ourselves, you know, as to whether we ought to pull out or stay there. Let's try to get to the historical background and understand why we're there. We're certainly not there to defeat terrorism. And why haven't they ever tried to get Osama bin Laden? I thought this was all about fighting terrorism and getting Osama bin Laden. Just keep asking why. The president promised that he was getting Osama bin Laden dead or alive. Why won't he keep his promise to the American people? And if he'll lie about that, what else would he lie about? Anyway, thanks so much for calling, Bart.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
And I share your concern about him. Anyway, let's go to Jonathan, who's calling from Palm Springs. Hi, Jonathan. What are your thoughts?
Hi. Well, actually, you just gave me a great segue, because my question is, do you agree with, for instance, with Alex Jones, that the 9/11 was conceived and executed by the United States government?
Well, I think that I do not know. What I do know is the fact that they knew the attack was coming, and they didn't try to stop it. And they knew who was going to be on those planes. We know that because of the passports. The passport that was discovered on the streets adjacent to the North Tower. The passport that was discovered, there in Pennsylvania. Now, somebody had to prepare those passports ahead of time. So if they would lie about the passports, if they'd lie about the bringing down of Building 7, which was obviously a controlled explosion, what else do we know about? All I can say is... I believe that they knew the attack was coming, and they did not try to stop it.
Mm.
And I do not believe for one minute that George Bush knew anything about what was happening. He knew something was going to happen. And if you've ever seen that Michael Moore film, of what happened that morning. As the president is sitting there in the classroom in Florida reading about a goat, he's scared to death. He's not a leader at all. He is simply a figurehead, and when he's known something is going to happen, it's happened, and he's frightened to death. Okay, anything else, Jonathan?
As far as that goes, I agree with you 100% on everything you've said. I would like to hear your take on Vice President Cheney's role, if you have one.
I think Vice President Cheney is one of the most dangerous men in America. And if you haven't read the book, The Transformation of America, I think it was written probably a decade before Dick Cheney became the President of the United States, Vice President of the United States. Maybe that was a slip of term, referring to him as the President, but many people think he is the President of the United States, and he is the man who is the manager of the current president. And if you watch Saturday Night Live, they think that is too. And I believe, of course, that Dick Cheney is a very evil and wicked man.
Vice President for torture.
Right. Oh,
thank you.
God bless. And let's go to Ken, who's calling us from Seal Beach here. No, I guess Ken. Hi, Ken. How are you doing?
Oh, fine. Yes, as you probably know, I'm a Vietnam-era veteran.
Right.
I'm a former sergeant. And I think this is a terrible mistake we made going into Iraq. There was absolutely no need to do this. We had Saddam Hussein being watched. He couldn't move. This really was a good excuse to get the whole Islamic world against America.
You're absolutely right. This is all designed to prepare the Islamic world for World War III. And I fear for these people. They may not be of my faith, but they're all human beings made in the image and likeness of God. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they're going to be slaughtered in the coming war. And the whole thing is designed to get them to hate America, and everything is being done to get us to hate them, because that's the only way you can get a war going.
And this other thing which the other gentleman brought up about torture, I can't understand. The world now knows that Bush has torture chambers, or let's say torture prisons.
No, wait a minute. Bush doesn't have them. Bush is simply a figurehead for the...
Okay, well, the administration.
The administration, okay.
Okay, they have these torture prisons, at least nine countries we know of in Eastern Europe, that have been revealed as having allowed the CIA to go there and do this. And he's telling the world that it's not really torture, but yet I don't want any law being passed by Congress that would ban torture and humiliation. He's an embarrassment to us. Let's put it this way. Bush is not playing his role well. Let's put it that way.
Well, I think that the thing is, how can you have it both ways?
You
can't. Unless, of course, you've got people who cannot see black or white, who cannot think.
Yeah.
And you see you see something, and then you see something exactly the opposite, and it's an old adage, are you going to believe what I tell you, or are you going to believe your lying eyes?
Yeah.
Well, anyway, God bless you,
okay.
And I know how you feel. It tears your heart out.
Thank you.
It tears my heart out, too. Okay, thanks. Then let's go to Chris calling from Gary, Indiana. Hi, Chris. How are you doing?
God bless you. I appreciate your show. I'm trapped in Vietnam, but even 100% disabled. A few of us left from Agent Orange. I need to ask you if they could putting Arthur Burnclaw, there is travesty in our VA hospitals regarding veterans. The best medicines we found out, Agent Orange, or even is nutrition, and the guys coming back from the Persian Gulf and the Iraqi people. the vitamin C. This is Major Doug Drugi, and they also use things as glutathione. That's alternative medicine. But I'm asking you a question you said some years ago. I appreciate, I believe in Jesus Christ. Did you say it was a mistake using, not using, or using DDT in South America?
Well, I believe that DDT is the safest of all of our insecticides. And we have a 4-tape set on this, my interviews with Dr. Gordon Edwards, and most of what you've heard about DDT just is not true. I mean, if you're used properly, it is very effective. We've killed 100 million people since 1972 or 1973 when Williams Ruckelshaus, the head of the EPA, outlawed DDT. And that's what it was all about. The reason they outlawed it was not because it was dangerous, because it was saving so many lives. And Alexander King of the Club of Rome agreed with that statement. That was his statement. You'll find it. Hold on. We'll be right back.
Yeah.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. We've got Chris calling from Gary, Indiana. Chris, if you go to my website, do you have access to a computer?
I can get one through the library.
All right, fine. Go to my website and pull down my Population Control Agenda monograph. That's the Population Control Agenda monograph. We have it up there. And there, of course, we quote from Alexander King, who was the vice chairman of the Club of Rome, and of writing sometime after the outlawing of DDT by Williams Ruckelshaus. He said it wasn't because DDT didn't work or was dangerous. It was because it was saving so many lives. And we saw this in Ghana. This is the reason why we wanted to outlaw DDT. And that's what it was all about. It's all about population control. And we've killed 100 million people from malaria. About 3 million people a year die. Of course, they keep changing the figures. It used to be 3 million people a year. Now they're trying to convince us it's only 1 million people. But about 3 million people die every year. There are between 300 million and 500 million people who contract malaria every year. And, of course, they're chronically disabled by this in tropical countries. And, you know, if you use the DDT, you can control most of this. That's the reason that they outlawed it. They did not want a solution. They wanted the problem.
I'm not arguing with you. One statement by a scientist, he worked at Dow Chemical, he knows Victor Yonico on the Agent Orange case. His name is Dr. Rajender Abraham. The horror of the PCDD molecule in dioxin, it destroys the mitochondria at a molecular level, and Dr. Rajender Abraham says it does the same thing. I don't know if he meant for humans, but what you're saying, that it should be used, DDT, to control malaria, I'm just holding.
Absolutely. It should be used to control a malaria, and because if, and they found this in South Africa, if you simply spray the inside of a house with it, you do that maybe twice a year, why, of course, you'll cut down the incidence of malaria in 90%.
Thank you for telling us the truth about Iraq. God bless you through Jesus Christ. Keep the faith.
We will, and God bless you, and I just hope you get better. And I'm sure there's got to be something that can be done for that Agent Orange, but that's a little out of my expertise. If you ever find anybody who would be a good guest on that subject, give me a call off the air, and we'd be glad to get them on.
Alternative medicine, nutrition. Thank you.
God bless. And I think it's terrible what we did to our boys in Vietnam with Agent Orange. I think it's terrible what we're doing to our boys in Iraq today with depleted uranium. And 30% of the young men coming back within 3 months are ill. They call it stress. They call it the chronic stress or post-traumatic stress. I don't think that's the case at all. I think that we're destroying the lives of our servicemen. I think the evil people in positions of power know exactly what they're doing. You need to get our 4-tape set on depleted uranium. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and of course, this is the time when I need to remind all of our listeners out across America that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and of course, we spend a great deal of time, on the air 5 hours a day trying to reach people. We have a unique opportunity. I'm not quite certain why it's fallen on me to do this, but I feel that this is what I'm to be doing over the rest of my life, and as long as God gives me breath, I'll be here behind the microphone, trying to educate people about the fact that we're involved in a spiritual battle being carried out on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. So if you are out across America and would like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and help us, would certainly appreciate it. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we hope that many of you will go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. You can listen to our programs there every a day, 5 hours a day on the Internet, 5 hours a day someplace on radio. You can get our shortwave frequencies. We're 4 hours a day on shortwave. We'll be on satellite. We're hoping soon to be available on a KU satellite. That'll be easy for people to pull down if they don't have either shortwave or access to other to the Internet. So your job out there in the listening audience is just to tell others about our program. If you'd like a free copy of our latest newsletter on peak oil, too, if you're wondering why the price of natural gas and heating oil and diesel fuel and jet fuel and gasoline has gone up so high, and why, although it's temporarily down, it's going to go up again, and why the cost of electricity has gone up so high, you'll want to get our latest newsletter, Peak Oil 2. And if you don't have access to the computer, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. And if you haven't, you know, been in contact with us before, we'd be glad to send you a free copy of my latest newsletter, Peak Oil 2. Now, if you have a computer, you can go up on the computer and you can pull down Peak Oil 1 and Peak Oil 2 and pull down all of our newsletters and read them through and study them. And we do have them already bound, and we've even put many of them into little pamphlets like the background of 911, Foreknowledge 911, or the Occult Hierarchy, three pamphlets there. All of this is available through my ministry, information that you can get to understand the true nature of the battle in which we're engaged, because we basically are aligned against supernatural forces from another dimension. For we're told in the scriptures, for we struggle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. And of course, remember those words of James Russell Lowell, though the cause of evil prosper, yet his truth alone is strong. Though a portion be the scaffold, and upon the throne be wrong. But that scaffold sways the future, for in the dim unknown standeth God within the shadows, keeping watch above his own. Please remember our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927, our website, RadioLiberty.com. Pray for those boys over there in Iraq, and pray for the Iraqi people, too. They're good people. And of course, please pray for our leaders and our ministers, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Until we're together again, may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls until we ask for them. And of course, if you're living in the Middle West and listening to this delayed broadcast on the Here's Help Radio Network, don't bother to call at all because you're hearing a delayed broadcast. But right now we have with us from the East Coast, Dr. Jerome Corsi, and he's written a wonderful book along with Craig Smith entitled Black Gold Stranglehold. And I think his message is so vitally important. I've asked him to stay up, and it's about midnight there on the East Coast, but I've asked him to stay up so he can share his message with you out across America. Dr. Corsi, thank you so very much for being with us again.
Dr. Stan, a great honor to be back with you. Thank you.
Well, now, of course, what your contention is that we're not being told the truth about the oil shortage. And your book really does a great job of simply pointing out how during the Second World War, our military planners realized that if they could wipe out the oil supply of the Germans, why they wouldn't be able to fight a war. And, you know, carrying that idea forward, if the United States does not have adequate oil, why we are not be able to maintain our standard of living, our industrial capacity. So you pick up the idea there, and we'll sort of explore this whole idea of peak oil.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan. You're exactly right. At the end of World War II, we realized that when we bombed the factories in Germany, we did not stop their ability to make airplanes. They could move the machines around. They made as many airplanes as they did. At the end of the war, they were making more than at the beginning of the war. When we bombed their petroleum, however, they could build the airplanes, they could build the tanks, but they couldn't put them into battle. The Soviets also realized the importance of oil. They were fighting the Nazis, too, and Stalin took a different path. He realized that the petroleum geologists in Russia were finding oil very deep into the earth, 6 to 8 miles down into the earth. And so he commissioned a whole scientific effort, like a Manhattan Project in Russia. And they determined that oil was not fossil fuel. They went back to Mendeleev, the Russian chemist who set up the periodic chart in the 1800s, the one we all study in chemistry. And their work on hydrocarbons indicated that oil was formed deep in the mantle of the earth. It came up through cracks in the fissures of the bedrock, and it pooled in sedimentary rock. And using that knowledge, the Russians have gone from being almost a nothing producer of oil at the end of World War II to being the second largest exporter of oil right behind Saudi Arabia.
And I think it's amazing when we stop and realize that Russia is providing the natural gas for almost all of Europe. Russia is supplying massive amounts of natural gas. You know, it's going to be supplying it to communist China and to other countries. And they're going to actually have outlets for their oil in Turkey and Israel. They're talking about that today. But Russia is a major exporter of both oil and natural gas because they've gone down where the oil and natural gas is, and our leaders know where it is. They just don't want the American people to know that the so-called concept of peak oil was actually generated by people who work for the oil companies, because they know something very basic in economics. If you've got a lot of oil and natural gas, the price goes down. When you have shortages, the price goes up. Which do you think they really want? Is that why they're financing the environmental movement to restrict their competition? We'll be back in just a moment here with Dr. Jerome Corsi. Well, Dr. Corsi, pick up the story from there.
Oh, great pleasure to be with you, Dr. Stan. We're going to have a great time. That was a great opening, and I'm looking forward to working with you through the whole hour.
Well, go right ahead now. I'm going to be quiet and let you talk for a while.
Oh, well, we'll go back and forth as we always do. I'm very comfortable working with you.
All right, fine. Well, you were talking about how the Russians had actually drilled down, certainly 6, 7, 8 miles to get down to where the oil is. And there are vast pools of oil down there. And, of course, our leaders say that can't be true because this is a fossil fuel and it came from decayed dinosaurs. I love that. You know, you sometimes wonder how gullible people can be. And I just want for our listeners to picture, imagine all those dinosaurs over there in the deserts of Saudi Arabia.
I'm going to do that.
Prancing around. Go ahead.
I'm going to do that next.
All right, go ahead.
Are you ready?
Yep.
Well, Dr. Stan, you know, that one of the difficulties that you have with the fossil fuel theory, I mean, think about it for a minute. It's like at the end of the Mesozoic era, what do people really want us to believe? That all the dinosaurs migrated to Saudi Arabia like elephants do? You know, they go to a burial ground. And in a big heap and pile, they died in Saudi Arabia. We've got lots of dinosaur bones in Montana. Where's the oil? It's a ridiculous theory to think all the dinosaurs are the cause of the oil. When you look at Saudi Arabia, we show in Black Gold Stranglehold the evidence that the bedrock under Saudi Arabia is deeply fractured. And if you look at the oil fields and you map them onto the bedrock structures, oil fields come right up above the levels of the bedrock that are fractured. So the oil is seeping up from the mantle the exact way the abiotic theory would say it would do. Abiotic, meaning it has nothing, oil has nothing to do with biological material, dinosaurs or ancient forests, to create itself. And all the levels of sedimentary rock in Saudi Arabia above the bedrock that's fractured are saturated with oil. So it's not one particular layer of sedimentary rock, one particular geological age where the dinosaurs died. The oil's coming up from the bedrock and saturating all the soil above Saudi Arabia, and that's why the Middle East is one of the dominant leaders in oil. It's not that the dinosaurs all herded there at the end of the Mesozoic era and died.
And, of course, the thing is that the oil companies have a vested interest in concealing from the American people and from the people of the world that oil is abiotic. In other words, it didn't come from decayed batter or it didn't come from decayed dinosaurs, that it is probably the second most prevalent fluid in the whole of the world because, of course, shortages generate far higher prices than abundance.
You're exactly right, Doug. Exactly right.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Dr. Jack Corsi, and Dr. Corsi is talking about how in Saudi Arabia, of course, the bedrock there below Saudi Arabia has been fractured, and that's why the oil is able to seep up from deep down within the earth, and of course, it come into great pools beneath Saudi Arabia. So this whole idea that, you know, that there's this, we're running out of oil is being pushed by the oil companies and by the great corporations and by the environmentalists, and it's all part of a scam to justify ever more control of our lives, to drive the price of oil up, to cause the American people to conserve. But really it's all about getting the American people to lower their living standards so we can have, as I always love to say, we can raise the living standards of the average American to that of the Bolivian peasant, and then we can all live happily ever after. And, of course, people always say, but the Bolivian peasant has a lower living standards. And I said, that's exactly right, and that's what they're going to reduce us to.
So, you know, Dr. Stan, right now, the idea of peak oil, because if you believe, and the oil companies can convince us, that oil comes from dinosaurs, well, there are only so many dinosaurs, so we're bound to run out of oil. That's the logical conclusion of that theory. It just doesn't work. I mean, right now today, the Energy Information Administration of the U.S. Department of Energy documents that there's 1.28 trillion barrels of oil in world reserves. Now, that's more than has ever been in world reserves of oil since recorded history, despite our world consumption of oil doubling since the 1970s. Now, that doesn't sound to me like we're running out. It sounds more like we're being lied to. There is no peak oil. We have abundant oil. What I believe, what the evidence shows, is that we're probably never going to run out. The first predictions, Dr. Stan, I found, we were going to run out of oil were in the 1890s. Came from the U.S. Geological Service. And it's been predicted constantly since then, despite the fact we have ever more oil reserves found all the time, more reserves today than ever in history. I don't see any evidence that we're running out. The world has a glut of oil, not a shortage.
I agree with you totally, and I think that the American people really need to get these figures because, you know, there's so much disinformation and misinformation up on the Internet. It is there for one and only one purpose, and that is to deceive the American people. And you read all of these books about Hubert's Peak and Hubert's Peak Revisited, and but you find out that all of these people who are writing them at one time or another have worked for Shell Oil or the other major oil companies that are intent upon convincing you that the world is running out of oil and natural gas, and that's why the price is going to have to go up, and that's why they're going to make so much money.
That's right. If you've got a shortage, you can charge a fire sale. And if the world is convinced we're running out of oil, you can charge a higher price. Let's take a look at the Gulf of Mexico just for a minute. The Cantarell well, which is the biggest one in Mexico, is in the Yucatan Peninsula. Now, the great meteor that hit there at the end of the Mesozoic era, the one they said killed the dinosaurs, deeply fractured the bed of all the Gulf. And that is the reason the oil seeped up in the Gulf into the Cantarell fields. It's Mexico's largest field. And today, I'm sure your listeners don't know, but BP and ExxonMobil, 128 miles outside of New Orleans, they're down 2 miles under the top of the Gulf, 6 miles down under the soil, 8 miles into the earth. They're finding another massive field. Probably fields are all over the Gulf with the fractured bed. Oil coming up, abiotic oil, not created by dinosaurs, created within the mantle of the earth, seeping up. That Cantarell well alone has given us 1.75 million barrels of oil a day.
Now that's a Mexican oil well.
And our oil well that we've got from BP Exxon is about to produce 1 million barrels of oil a day.
Now, I think for our listeners, the United States consumes 20 million barrels of oil a day. I think China consumes about 5 million barrels. Europe consumes about 16 million barrels. The total oil production is 80 million barrels a day today. And so, basically, with that one oil well, we'll give 1/20th of all the oil we use here in the United States. And yet they're trying to convince us that we're running out of oil.
That's exactly right, Dr. Stan. And if you expand into the Gulf, because we're only a little way into the Gulf, 128 miles out, only 10 miles down. Now, 20 years, we couldn't go 10 miles down. In a few years, we'll be able to go 20 miles down. The abiotic theory of oil says the oil is coming up all over the world. 70% of the world is oceans. We know that there are deep sea vents all through the ocean that are venting methane. Methane is natural gas that's coming deep from within the mantle of the earth. No dinosaurs down 10, 20 miles into the mantle. So if the earth has abundant oil and natural gas, it's a complete lie that we're running out, that it's peaking. It's abundant, available, and it's available right here in America.
And Chris, what I like to point out to people is, if you really think that there is a massive shortage, that we just don't have any natural gas and oil here, and that's why we have to import 60% of our oil from other countries, if there's really a shortage that threatens the stability of our nation, why have they consistently blocked development up in Anwar? And then, of course, we point out that we are firmly convinced there are massive pools off the north slope of Alaska, but even assuming that's, I'm incorrect there, there are massive pools of oil off both coasts, and recently, within the last week, a court has awarded the oil companies, the major oil companies, $1 billion plus another couple of $100 million for the fact that they're not being allowed to drill the oil that's off the coast of San Luis Obispo, Ventura, and Santa Barbara, where there are 500 million barrels of oil. That's 500 billion barrels of oil just in that one limited area off our coast. And because they haven't allowed the oil companies to drill there and they hold the leases, they're going to get $1 billion of your tax money, and another couple hundred million dollars of your tax money as well, so that we can not drill the oil, so that we can create the oil shortages so we can drive the price up. Now, if there's really a problem, why won't they let the oil companies drill there? And the truth of the matter is the oil companies don't want to drill. They're going to do a lot better off not drilling. That's why the oil companies help to finance the environmental movement and their friends and the rest of the, you know, the corporate structure and the great foundations and in government are funding the environmental movement to block the drilling of oil wells. Why would oil companies do that? Doesn't make sense unless they make a lot more money when there's a shortage. So once you understand that, it all makes sense. Go ahead, Dr. Gorsuch.
Well, Dr. Stan, I agree with you entirely. In Black Gold Stranglehold, you'll see we've got 20 pages of footnotes. We fully document the deep earth abiotic, having nothing to do with dinosaurs, no biological material, theory of oil. And with those 20 pages of footnotes, you'll see that we've got enough oil in the United States offshore and natural gas deep within the United, continental United States and in Alaska. One of the huge resources of oil is all through the spine of the western states, the shale oil reaching all the way up into western Canada, much more abundant than Saudi Arabia. And Dr. Stan, I was on a program, just to follow your point, with the Sierra Club earlier this week. And I said to the gentleman from the Sierra Club, I think you ought to register as a foreign agent lobbyist. He said, why? I said, well, you're doing more to sell oil for Saudi Aramco than anyone I ever met. by preventing us from drilling oil we know we have abundantly, and the natural gas we have abundantly in the United States, you're putting us to be dependent upon foreign countries, including Mexico. We take all these illegal immigrants, and we don't want to shut off the 1.75 million barrels of oil we get from Mexico a day. We're getting our oil from Mexico, Venezuela, and Canada, three of our largest importers. We know they've got enough oil to import to us from the Yucatan, from the shale oil, and from deep within Venezuela, that we don't have it in the United States still. I think that's nonsense. And within Black Gold Stranglehold, you'll find the evidence to see we've got enough oil offshore in the Gulf and both oceans in Alaska and in shale oil and natural gas within the United States. We can go from 12 million barrels a day importing down quickly to 11, 10, 9, 8, all the way to where oil independent again, where we should be.
And I really think that it's so important that people know that who Thomas Gold was. And I knew he must be a pretty good guy because I've read so many things up on the Internet demonizing him and marginalizing him. And here's a guy that he was an astrophysicist from Cornell. He'd been at Harvard. He'd been at Cornell. A brilliant man. And when they call him, sort of an airhead and, certainly when they start criticizing a man like this, you know that it's part of the process of demonizing somebody who's telling the truth. So I want you to tell our listeners who Thomas Gold was and why his theories are so vitally important to the survival of our country and our way of life.
Well, Dr. Stan, you're exactly right. Thomas Gold was an astrophysicist at Cornell, very famous one. His specialty was radio spectrography. In World War II, he'd helped the U.S. and Britain develop radar. He got on to the abiotic theory of oil because as a radio spectrographer, he knew that Saturn, one of our planets in the solar system, and his moon Titan, have abundant hydrocarbon. And he said, well, if Saturn can have it and had no dinosaurs, why does the Earth have to have dinosaurs to have oil?
And, of course, the thing is that it was methane. A lot of their atmosphere is methane.
Correct.
In these other countries, I always thought we had to have living things to have methane. Or is it because we have methane that we have living things? Because I happen to believe that God created the heaven and the earth. But I also believe that he created abundant amounts of methane. And, of course, it's trapped within the base, within the bowels of the earth, where it is constantly producing oil. And we're going to be back here in just a moment with Dr. Gorsuch. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest today is Dr. Jerome Corsi. We're talking about his book entitled Black Gold Stranglehold. It's an excellent book, an excellent read. It's the sort of information you need to give, put to rest the lies you're being told by ABC, CBS, NBC, Time, Newsweek, U.S. News and World Report, and, of course, so many of the commentators in the world today. There's an organized, orchestrated effort to deceive the American people about so many things, and one of the major ones is we're running out of oil. American production peaked in 1971, which it did, but not because we ran out of oil, but because the environmental movement forced the capping of oil wells all across America and blocked further drilling. So we've been having less drilling since 1971 than ever before. And then there's the Dr. Dafis, who goes around the country saying world oil production is going to peak on Thanksgiving 2005. And I simply point out, well, Dr. Dafis used to work for the Shell Oil Company at their lab there in Houston, and who knows where he's getting his money from today. I hope he really doesn't believe what he's saying, because he's really a very, very smart guy. Under any circumstances, why don't you go ahead and tell us about Dr. Thomas Gold and his ideas of this abiotic theory of oil, because I think it's seminal to our whole discussion.
Well, you're right, Dr. Stan. Thomas Gold, the astrophysicist at Cornell, he was a very famous scientist. He had worked with radio spectrography, helped the British in World War II develop radar. He showed that a whole series of neutron stars were actually putting out radio waves. He demonstrated that. He showed that if Saturn has hydrocarbons abundantly and its moon, Titan, has methane clouds, which he showed through radio spectrography, Thomas Gold said, well, if Saturn can produce hydrocarbons without dinosaurs or ancient dying forests, why can't the Earth? And we've even discovered methane on Mars. These recent probes have found methane. Now, there's no life on Mars, and scientists in the laboratory at Livermore, we document this in Black Gold Stranglehold, the new book, they've produced synthetically methane in the laboratory, using iron sulfide, calcium carbonate, and water under the pressures and temperatures deep within the Earth. If we can synthesize methane, it doesn't take living material to produce it. And the people are being lied to that we're reaching peak oil. On Thanksgiving, we're going to have a great Thanksgiving, and the U.S. Department of Energy has a Deep Trek project that people don't know about to finance drilling of methane, natural gas, at up to 10 miles under the continental United States. And they say it's abundant. And the new technology we have to get that deep in drilling permits us to reach huge amounts of methane that people don't know that are there. And just like the Soviets are drilling in the bedrock, the granite, off of Vietnam and finding huge amounts of oil in the igneous, the volcanic rock, where there was no dinosaurs, so we're going to find methane abundantly 10 miles under the continental United States. We're going to find oil off the Gulf and both coasts if we'd be permitted to look. It's just a lie that oil has peaked. The truth is the world is awash in oil. We've never had as much oil and natural gas found in the history of human beings.
And yet the average American has no idea of the truth of the matter of what's really going on behind the scenes. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Dr. Jerome Corsi. His book, Black Gold Stranglehold, we do actually have a four-tape set on this whole subject going into the background of Dr. Thomas Gold's material. We call it, of course, The Oil Deception, but this book as well. In fact, if you would like a copy of the book, why, we can get it for you. We think it's a top-notch book that every American should read, Black Gold Stranglehold, and, of course, our four-tape set, The Oil Deception. You need to understand what's going on and how, you know, it really doesn't matter how ridiculous something is. If you say it often enough, people will believe it. If you really believe that oil came from decaying dinosaurs and there are no more dinosaurs and that's why we're having the problems, and we're running out of oil, why you'll believe just about everything. Now, certainly, Dr. Corsi is talking about Dr. Thomas Gold, who was the astrophysicist, and he put forward this idea of the A biotic origin of oil. And maybe you could explore that a little bit. And then, of course, how this fits into what's going on today. What do you mean by abiotic? And, of course, why is that theory so unique and different than what we've been teaching our students in universities for so many years that just isn't true?
Well, Dr. Stan, abiotic means no relationship to biological material to produce oil. And the idea goes back to the Russian scientist Mendeleev, who created the periodic chart that we all learn in chemistry courses in college, or even in high school today. Mendeleev, who did a lot of research on hydrocarbons, said it was nonsense that it took dinosaurs to produce oil. So the biological material in oil is because oil forms deep within the mantle of the earth naturally. The hydrocarbons combine. It seeps up through cracks in the mantle into the sedimentary rock, and it picks up biological debris on the way up. In fact, microorganisms can live on the oil and become part of the biological content of the oil. That does not mean the oil was created by those microbiological organisms. Now, Mendeleev knew this. The Russians knew it. The Russians, after World War II, were drilling down 6-8 miles into the earth. They become the second largest exporter of oil in the world after Saudi Arabia. We know it. Our oil companies know it. They're just lying to Americans. We're drilling. Take a look at the Thunder Horse well in the Gulf. Exxon Mobil and BP are down 8 miles into the earth under the Gulf. They're going to bring up 1 million barrels a day from that well. The Yucatan, the Cantarell well, off the Yucatan was created for Mexico when the great comet hit at the end of the Mesozoic era, supposedly the comet or the meteorite that destroyed the dinosaurs, killed all the dinosaurs. It fractured the bed of the Gulf. That oil was discovered when a fisherman saw the oil seeping up in the water. No one knew it was down there. That, again, is deep earth abiotic oil, which is abundant and naturally created by the earth. It's why today we have 1.28 trillion barrels of oil in world reserves, according to the Energy Information Administration, more than ever in human history, despite world consumption doubling since 1970. Dr. Stan, that does not sound to me like we're running out. It sounds like the people are being lied to. The oil companies are not building any new refineries in the United States for 30 years. And the oil companies and the environmentalists have conspired to restrict supply and convince the American people there's a shortage of peak oil, which is just a lie. It's not verified by the statistics. It's not verified by the science.
And I think it's really so fascinating as you see how this whole scam has been played out. The environmentalists, of course, have blocked the building of nuclear power plants in America. Now, we're subsidized in the building of nuclear power plants in China, where certainly our technology is being used for building nuclear power plants throughout the whole world. I think France gets something like 80% of their electricity from nuclear power plants. It's very cheap and it's very safe, and people say, well, would you want to have a nuclear power plant in your backyard? I point out that my son spent many years on aircraft carriers powered by nuclear power plants, and he lived right over the top of one. Our boys are on our nuclear submarines. They live right with them. They don't have any problems because nuclear plants work by generating heat and driving steam turbines. Then they say, what are you going to do with the expended fuel? We've got, you know, zillions of it, and they can't even put it in Yucca Mountain. It's so dangerous. And I say, why don't we reprocess it like everybody else does? Most people have never heard of reprocessing because they're not supposed to. They want the problem, so we can't have the nuclear power, so they can create the crisis, so they can burn up all the natural gas and drive the price up from $3 a million BTUs up to where it is now, $12 to $14. Somebody's making a lot of money. And, of course, the environmentalists are doing everything they can to help the oil industry. But the American people don't understand how the game is played. We're going to be back in just a moment. And welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, our guest this evening, Dr. Jerome Corsi, and we're talking about his book, A Black Gold Stranglehold. And Dr. Corsi, as you tell people about these things, what sort of response do you get? Do you get sort of a shock disbelief like this can't really be true?
At first, yes, Dr. Stan, because people have been told since they were children that oil is fossil fuel. I mean, it's almost equivalent. We say fossil fuel, we think oil. But as soon as we explain that oil, hydrocarbons are naturally created and combined on Earth as they are in the planetary system, on Saturn, abundant in hydrocarbons, the moons of Titan has methane clouds. We found methane on Mars. We can create it in a laboratory. Once people start thinking, they know that all the dinosaurs didn't herd to Saudi Arabia at the end of the Mesozoic era and die, and that's why we have oil there and not in Arizona. The fractures under the earth in Saudi Arabia are deep and unique. We publish that information in Black Gold Stranglehold. Writing a series of articles. It's also on worldnetdaily.com. Even with the geological references to the technical geological articles that prove the bedrock under Saudi Arabia is fractured. The bedrock in the Gulf is fractured. A great meteor hit off the Yucatan at the end of the Mesozoic era. It created Mexico's biggest fields, the Cantarell fields. We're importing 1.75 million barrels a day from those fields. We haven't looked deeper. Our geologists who have got this fossil fuel mentality, when they hit bedrock, stop. The Russians, working with the Vietnamese, and the Russians since the end of World War II have known that deep earth oil is available. Russia has become the second largest exporter of oil right after Saudi Arabia. Off the coast of Vietnam, they're into bedrock granite that is igneous in nature, volcanic, not even metamorphic, zero biological content. And they're finding huge amounts of oil there where Western companies failed off the coast of Vietnam. Our geologists stop when they hit the bedrock. But Dr. Sam, we've documented in Black Gold Stranglehold and on worldnetdaily.com that since the 1930s, geologists have been finding oil in bedrock structures. They just, in their mind sense, won't permit them to understand that oil and natural gas, methane, are abundant 8 to 10 miles deep within the Earth, maybe extremely abundant in the mantle of the Earth.
Hold that thought right there. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Dr. Jerome Corsi, and we've had him on different subjects in the past, but he's written a fascinating book called Black Gold Stranglehold. We recommend the book. In fact, we'll get that for you if you'd like to have it. And then, of course, we have a four-tape set that goes along with that called The Oil Deception. Now, if you would like to call Dr. Corsi and you have a question or comment, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And, you know, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And I've written some articles on this subject on newswithviews.com. And you'd be amazed at all the incense letters that I got back from people saying, well, don't you know that you do not find oil in rock? You only find it in the sediment. And if you knew anything, why, we've got all these articles by all these specialists, and they say that peak oil is a reality. And we've read Dr. Hubert's book, and we've read Dr. Davis's book, and we want you to know that if you just do your homework, why, you'd believe just as we believe. Well, if I believe just as these people believe, why we're in real trouble. I think we're in real trouble, but for an entirely different reason. I don't think it matters whether there's a shortage or it's a created shortage. Our way of life is going to change. They're going to raise the price of the things that allow us to have electricity and power and warmth and heat and travel. They're doing this very intentionally. They know what they're doing. They just don't want the American people to know. So it doesn't matter whether it's a scam or not, because, of course, it would take us years to undo all the harm that the environmental movement some of the finest environmentalists money could buy, have done in certainly restricting the free enterprise system. And if we had a free enterprise system for oil here, why would we have all the oil we need? There is Ed Deathridge we've had as a guest, and he points out that if the government would put a floor under a barrel of oil, about $25 a barrel, in other words, a floor, then private enterprise could go out and begin drilling oil and make money. But you have to understand that the aero company doesn't want a floor. They want the price of $60, $70, $80, $100 a barrel. That's where they make all the money. And if you and I were to go out and borrow $100 million and start drilling for oil, they'd drop the price down so low, we'd go bankrupt. They'd drop the price to $10 a barrel, we'd go bankrupt, and then they'd boost the price up again. That's how the free enterprise system works. I believe in free enterprise. I don't believe in cartels that work in concert with government to prevent competition, and that's what the game is all about, isn't it, pretty well, Dr. Corsi?
Oh, you're exactly right, Dr. Stan. I mean, we wrote in Black Gold Stranglehold, there are more reserves. The government validates this. The Energy Information Administration, 1.28 trillion barrels of world reserves. And the oil companies, ExxonMobil, Chevron, all of them are sitting on top of more reserves than they've ever had in the history of their operation. But they're not going to come off of those reserves until the price is right. If they can convince everybody listening that oil is fossil fuel, well, by definition, that means we're going to run out at peak oil because there were only so many dinosaurs, only so many ancient forests, so we've got to run out of oil eventually, no matter how much we find. Well, that's just silly. The oil is being found deep within the earth, being found since the 1950s, actually even in the United States since the 1930s, 8-10 miles down in bedrock, and natural gas there as well, abundantly, but the price has got to be right for the oil companies. Why don't we ask why they've built no new refineries in 30 years? They don't want any more oil getting into the gas pump or into heating oil, and the environmentalists, whom you're right, Dr. Stan, they fund the oil companies, have combined forces. I'm recommending the Sierra Club should register as a foreign agent, because no one has sold more oil for Saudi Aramco ever than the Sierra Club, by restricting our ability to drill the oil we know we have in the United States.
What did that fellow from the Sierra Club say when you made that suggestion that he really should register as a foreign agent?
He should. Well, he said no one had ever said that to him before. He said he got to think about it. I said, well, you better think fast, because on every radio program I'm on, if I get a chance, I'm going to mention it. And you better just get the papers, because you should be registered as a foreign agent. We're taking in, look at the countries we're importing oil from. They're all around us. Mexico, Venezuela, Canada, three of our biggest importers. Canada's got huge shale oil. We do, too. We've got it all through the spine of the country in the Rocky Mountains. Mexico's got huge oil in the Cantarell well off the Gulf. We do, too. Right off of the Gulf of Mexico, we've got huge amounts of oil, and off of the Pacific Coast and the Atlantic Coast, we should be drilling more off California, all the way up to Oregon, and off of Florida, all the way up to Maine. There's oil all through there, and in Alaska. We've got natural gas throughout the United States. Venezuela's going deep for it, and we don't need to be sending $250 billion overseas to countries who are not in our favor. Well, we can't return the illegal immigrants. That's what we say in Black Gold Stranglehold. From Mexico, we're taking 1.75 million barrels of oil a day from them. Nor can we discipline Hugo Chavez, who's using our oil money to support drugs in Latin America that get imported, smuggled in through our borders in the South to corrupt our youth and to corrupt America. That's just ridiculous. And Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia with Wahhabism, extreme Wahhabism. It's an affront to our national security that we do not go after the oil, natural gas that's available here. We don't need to be importing 12 million barrels a day. We get easily another million barrels out of Alaska and the Anwar The area we want to drill in the Alaska is about the size of a postage stamp on a football field. Only about 6,000 square miles, 0.004% of Alaska, 0.0001% we have abundant oil here in Black Gold Stranglehold. We give a 7-point plan to become oil independent. Your listeners can read that and press Congress and the President to get us there today.
All right, well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And if you disagree, we'd love to hear from you. If you're an environmentalist, we'd love to hear from you. If you're concerned about the pristine wilderness in Anwar, which, of course, is frozen about 11 months out of the year, the fact that they get pictures of the reindeer up there, and of course, you see them there on the brown grass. That's the only time, maybe about 1 month out of a year, where you see any grass or anything there. It's frozen. It's tundra. It's frozen with permafrost. There are no trees because no trees can grow there. So give us a call. If you agree, you disagree, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And we have a caller right now, and let's see, we have Deanne, and where is Deanne from? Well, we'll just ask her. Is that Deanne from Pennsylvania?
Yes.
Well, do you have a question for us?
Yes, I do. This has been a real heavy concern of mine that we are put in such a bind in this country deliberately, and a stranglehold is a wonderful term.
It really is.
Dr. Corsi, and I would like to know what on God's green earth can we do about this? It's just, you know, we're just plain normal citizens at the mercy of the stranglehold, and it's like, I'm sure everybody thinks like the old saying, well, you can't fight City Hall, you know, that kind of attitude, and people just kind of just crawl in a hole and, you know, do nothing, and then what can we do?
All right, that's a good question. How would you respond to Deanne?
Well, Deanne, we give you the information in Black Gold Stranglehold, and I'm 59 years old. I've been in Washington for many, many years, mm-hmm. back and forth. My dad helped create the United Transportation Union. Even as a kid, I was in Washington. If you call the senators and congressmen,
mm-hmm.
if you write them letters,
okay.
you'd be surprised. 8 or 10 letters, 20 letters, 30 letters, they hear that. 20, 30 phone calls, it ties up their phone. You have more power as a citizen in this country than anywhere else in the world. You say, we've read Dr. Corsi's book, Black Gold Stranglehold. We've listened to Dr. Stan's radio program. We were angry, we're mad, we don't want to put up with this anymore. We need more refineries. Those congressmen are going to listen. And you have much more power and the ability to get on the phone, write a letter, send a fax. Your congressmen, your senators will listen to you.
What is a website?
Do you have a website at all?
Why don't you give your website?
All right, well, ours is radioliberty.com, and if you'd like a copy of our newsletters, it's simply radioliberty.com. Pardon me, call us at 1-800-544-8927. Or do you have access to a computer?
Yeah.
Well, go up to my website, radioliberty.com, pull down my last two newsletters, Peak Oil and Peak Oil 2.
Peak Oil 2,
and read them through, and then give us a call and let us know what you think. Okay. I'll tell you what, some people who disagree get mighty angry with Peak Oil 1. I don't know what they're going to do with Peak Oil 2.
and Black Gold Stranglehold is on Amazon.com.
Right.
Okay.
Three separate words, Black Gold Stranglehold. And my name is Corsi.
Corsi.
And it's a great book, Deanne. It's really, I've enjoyed reading it so much.
And you can find it very easily on Amazon.com.
Yeah. Sometimes I do feel like that we no longer have a representative government, because the powers that be are just have them in their pockets, you know.
But the thing is that if we don't do anything, the other side wins by default. And believe me that there are a lot of congressmen.
I don't mean
there.
Not do anything, but it does, you just kind of question, you know, I'm not saying don't do anything, but you do kind of question where our representative government is, the fact that they have allowed us to get this far in this bind, and you don't feel like you see them doing anything.
Well, I've seen a lot of good things happen. I remember when Phyllis Schlafly, one woman, took on the whole Equal Rights Amendment. And she turned the whole of this country around on that.
I was a part of that, by the way.
Well, God bless you for
it.
Phyllis
is a woman from America.
And don't get discouraged. They want us to get discouraged. And you do. You keep writing your congressmen and keep letting them know. But the biggest thing you can do is help us educate the rest of the people. Because when the majority of the people realize this is a scam, and, of course, realize how, you know, what's going on in Washington, D.C., then we can begin turning things around. Well, because, remember, most congressmen aren't dedicated to the right, or they're not dedicated to the left. They're just dedicated to staying there. And if they know that if they don't do the right thing, that they're going to get fired by the people, why, then they're going to do the right thing.
We broke that stranglehold, too, in Diana, the belief that putting the truth into writing still is powerful. The people can read Black Gold Stranglehold, and they can see that oil, the science, that oil is not fossil fuel. The 20 pages of footnotes.
Well, I like the fact that you're giving us, and I would like to maybe put this in the form of a letter to the editor, you know, using your facts. Is that possible to do that?
And you get his book, and you'll find a great deal of information there.
Because I believe that knowledge is power, and that
knowledge
we can empower more and more people with this knowledge, that hopefully it can turn things around.
That's right. I'm writing the book, Black Gold Stranglehold. It's in the bookstores. I'm staying up with Dr. Stan after midnight. And I think there's no more thing.
Well,
I'm
on Eastern time myself. It's
God
about
bless.
40 to 1 here.
Well, thank you so much, for staying up, Deanne.
And there's nothing more powerful than the truth gotten into the hands of the American people. There's nothing more powerful than that.
Actually,
that's how we turned the Equal Rights Amendment around when
that's
I was
correct.
With Concerned Women for America, and we did have an alternate voice to the National Organization for Women, but we came together as one voice against them, and I feel the American people are going to have to do the same thing.
We're going to have to, and of course your job is to get the people listening to our program. I'd like to finish the quotation that Jerome Kersey used. Daniel Webster said, there's nothing as powerful as truth, and often nothing so strange. One of my favorite quotations.
Mm.
Anything else, Deanne, before we let you go?
No, but just continue the good work, and God bless you.
And do you listen on a regular basis?
Pretty much, yeah.
God bless you.
I'm listening on a micro broadcaster, somebody. I'm out in the boondocks here in northwest Pennsylvania, and I'll just say thank you to whoever the micro broadcaster is, because I don't know who it is. There's no call letters or nothing to an FM station. It's a low-powered station, but I pick it up, you know, like so-so, you know.
There are hundreds of stations across the country that are carrying our program tonight. Little guys that we'll never know their names.
Well,
just want to get
the
truth out.
Well, I just publicly thank them.
God bless you.
Bye.
Well, you know, it really is exciting, Dr. Kersey, to know that people are out there listening. And certainly, as you tell people this story, and certainly I appreciate so much your staying up this late at night, but I think that we're reaching an awful lot of people out there.
Well, you know, Dr. Sandy, you think back in the history of the world, you go back even to the people who wrote the Bible, and the people that they've reached subsequently, the pen is mightier than the sword. And truth does impact the human soul, and it's the most powerful force ever on the face of the earth. And that's why I'll stand to criticism or debate or anything else. What we wrote in Black Gold Stranglehold is true. Oil is not from all the dinosaurs dying and rotting. When I was a kid, I had a cat that died. I buried it in the backyard. It was ashes to ashes, dust to dust. I dug that cat up about a year later. It was no oil there. It's not written ashes to ashes, dust into oil. It just doesn't happen that way. The second law of thermodynamics does not work that way. Advanced forms of hydrocarbons like oil right under the earth are not produced from lower forms of energy as are in carbohydrates, which is living plants dying and living protoplasm, dinosaurs dying. It just doesn't work that way.
No, but I'll tell you what, it doesn't matter how ridiculous something is. If you say it often enough, people will believe it. Our job is to get them to start using the good mind that God gave them and understand that we're being conned.
That's
our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you're out there and like to talk to Dr. Corsi. If you agree or disagree, that's what talk radio is really all about. And I really think that people need to understand that the ready availability of natural gas and how they create the shortages by, for instance, the government says, well, now all new electricity generating plants have to burn natural gas. And why would they do that? Because we've got so much natural gas, we've got to use it up. And so we've managed to raise the price of this product, which was $3 for a million British thermal units, up to $12 to $14 by creating an artificial shortage. I'm sure you're right on top of that, aren't you, Dr. Corsi?
Well, when I was a kid, Dr. Stan, they burned the natural gas off of the oil fields because they considered it worthless. And today, if you take a look at the Department of Energy, the Deep Trek program, government knows there's ample natural gas 10 miles under the surface of the United States.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up this evening's program here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Sir Dr. Jerome Corsi, and go ahead and pick up the story. We've got 3 minutes to close up the program. You were saying that certainly the government knows there's plenty of gas down there, but of course, the more you drill for, the more you get. Why, the lower the cost, because the abundance lowers price and the shortage raises the price. Pick up the story, Dr. Corsi, for you have 3 minutes to wrap up your thoughts.
Well, at 10 miles under the earth, where the Deep Trek program sponsored by the Department of Energy is getting the oil companies to drill for natural gas. They know it's abundant. And there were no dinosaurs down 10 miles under the earth. They're willing to drill the bedrock. They're lying to the American people to say that oil is fossil fuel. The petroleum geologists know that oil is found deep within the earth and it's abiotic, created just like on Saturn or methane or Mars. You can find methane. You can find it naturally created within the earth. It's abundant. The oil companies need to face the American people. They need to build more refineries. They need to be able to get more gas into the gas pump, gasoline. They need to get more methane, natural gas, and the heating oil at a reasonable price. Because right now we've got 1.28 trillion barrels of oil in worldwide reserves, more than ever in human history, according to the Energy Information Administration, despite the fact that world consumption has doubled since 1970. Now, Dr. Stan, that does not sound to me like we're running out. It doesn't sound to me like people have to spend $50 to $75 to fill up their gas tank. It doesn't sound to me like the oil companies need to make $96 billion in profits. What we need is more refineries, more information to understand that oil is abundant around the world and we're probably never going to run out of oil and natural gas. But we need to get the people with the knowledge in their minds so they can impact Congress and impact the oil companies to say we need a continual supply of oil at a reasonable price, which is abundantly available, and the technology permits us to go get it.
And I think the major thing is going to be an informed, a concerned, and a motivated populace who realize we've been scammed. Who can begin educating others? And when enough people realize the lie that we've been told, when enough people realize that it's not that we're running out of dinosaurs, in fact, dinosaurs have nothing to do with oil production, what we need to do is start writing our congressmen and writing our senators and writing certainly letters to the editor and talking to everybody we meet and getting them to get Dr. Corsi's excellent book, Black Gold Stranglehold. God bless you. We'll be talking to you on Saturday.
Dr. Stan, a great honor to be with you again. I look forward to it.
Good night.
Good night.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. And, of course, there are many, many people who believe that we went to war in Iraq because, of course, we wanted to get that oil. We wanted to get that oil and put it on the market and and yet, of course, if you look and see what's actually happened, and you remember what Congressman Murtha said last Thursday when he gave his speech, oil production in Iraq is down, and it considerably down. Now, why would we do anything that stupid if we really wanted to get oil on the market so that we wouldn't drive the price up? Why, Or is it possible that we've wanted to disrupt oil production in Iraq so that we could create artificial shortages in the world and drive the prices up and the oil companies would make $100 billion? Could anything be that diabolical that we would tell the American people we went into Iraq or lead them to believe we went there to get oil so there'd be plenty of oil and we could drive the price down, and instead we created artificial shortages and drove the price up? Is that really possible? Are the people that wicked? And I would like to suggest there are. And if you have not read my material on the occult hierarchy that rules the world, you need to get it. You need to grasp an understanding of what's really going on in the world today. I suggest you go to my website, radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com, www. And read my articles on the Illuminati, on the occult hierarchy that rules the world. That's the May and that's the May and June newsletters of this year, as I recall. And then, of course, we put together some little pamphlets on the occult hierarchy. But if you'd like more information, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We hope you'll go to our website. And, of course, you'll listen to our programs there on the Internet. And you can listen 5 hours a day, directly or indirectly. We're on the American Freedom Network early in the morning, and the Genesis Network, the GCNLive.com, and then the Radio Liberty Network. And then there's all sorts of archive programs there that you can listen to. Now, you can pull down our newsletters, and you certainly have our permission to copy them and distribute them, because we want you to get that information out. If you're listening to us on the Here's Help Radio Network, and of course that's going to be a delayed rebroadcast, but remember that we do a program in your area at 12:30 every Saturday. That's at 12:30 every Saturday that you can listen to, and we encourage you to listen to that. It's many times it'll be different subjects, sometimes it'll be the same subjects and even the same guests, but listen to that program on Saturday, and your job all throughout the Middle West where those stations are is to tell others about our program. Encourage them to listen and to get educated, because if you are not involved trying to save America, then who will be? And if not now, when? We're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men, and most people don't understand that there truly is another dimension, that there really are people who've given themselves over to the dark side, who've embraced the prince of this world and follow his leadership. So we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for our leaders and our ministers, but please pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. If you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And so until we're together again, may the Lord be with you.